KQBAR is the call sign we'll use tonight. And any station, whether or not you're a member of the Brigham Amateur Association, is welcome to participate. Purpose of the technical net is to exchange ideas about things related to amateur radio, telecommunications arts, electronics, things that depend on those things. Pretty much anything you want to talk about, as long as you can find some arcane, perverse way of tying it back to amateur radio or those other things, we are more than happy to entertain the subject. See, what else can I tell you about? Again, you do not need to be a member of the Bergen Amateur Association. You need to have privileges to operate in the 2-meter amateur band, and we hope that you will join us, because unlike other nets, we don't do a round table as much as we do take an inventory of those who might have a question, might have a comment, and or people who just want to let us know they're there. And we find it very important to be aware of who's there. So even if you don't have a question or a comment and you're lurking, we would hope that you would check in, because often we hear the subject matter of the net to be consistent with those with whom we're aware of their presence. So keep that in mind as well. Checking into the net is pretty straightforward. We use a process where by call sign prefix we call for check-in. They'll check in with your call sign, your name, whether or not you have a question or a comment or none of the above, and that's pretty much it. So your call sign, your name, whether or not you have a question or a comment or none of the above. So on that happy note, let us begin. First check-in will be Alpha Station. Stations whose call signs begin with the letter Alpha, please call K2 Bravo Alpha Romeo. Call sign your name and whether or not you have a question or a comment. Stations whose call signs begin with Kilo 2. Kilo 2. Please call K2BAL with your call sign, your name, whether or not you have a question or a comment. Please call K2BAL. K2BAR, K2DFL, David, no question or comment. K2BAR, K2RPC, Ken, none of the above. Okay, I have K2DFL and K2RPC, good evening, David and Ken. Any other Kilo 2?
Hello, this is Willow Oscar, Jim. No question or comment.
Good evening, K2ZO. How are you, Jim? Alrighty. Any other Kilo 2s?
K2 Zulu Charlie. No questions or comment.
Okay, Dave, good evening. Any other Kilo 2s? Alright. Any other Kilo calls? Please check in at this time with your call sign, your name, and whether or not you have a question or a comment. None of the above. Please call K2BAR.
KF2ID, Ben, I have a question of information.
Good evening, Ben. Very good. Any other Kilo call?
KO2, okay, Bennett. None of the above.
Thanks, Bennett. All right. Any other Kilo call? Please call K2BAR.
KA2BDU, Helmut, and I do have a question.
Hey, Helmut, good evening to you, sir. Noted your question. Any other kilos? All right, how about the Whiskey Station? The Whiskey Station, let's call K2BAR with your call sign, your name, and whether or not you have a question or comment or not, you call K2BAR.
This is W2JEK, Don, no question.
And Don? Okay, anybody else with a whiskey call? Boy, how about the ever-popular Alpha call, probably the November call? Call K2BAR. Yeah, any other stations wishing to check into the net? Please call K2BAR with your call sign, your name, and whether or not you have a question or comment, or none of the above.
K2ORS, K2BAR, no questions, no comments.
Good night. Good evening, Gordon.
Good evening, Robert. Okay. Nice hearing you as well. Any other stations wishing to check in, please call K2BA. I would call by your name and whether or not you have a question or comment or none of the above. Alrighty. Well, I'm going to post something here. Been building some copper cacti lately. So those are J-poles. I've been building a single band one for a lot of reasons, which I'll explain when I get to it, but I'll post my question as the third questioner announcement. I don't have a question so much as, you know, just some interesting facts about it. And then I have a little quiz for everybody who's here, and maybe those who are lurking. You'll have a special quiz. So here's the question for the special quiz. Hold your answers until we ask for them. The special quiz is, name one personal item and one technical item that you would put in an amateur radio go kit. One personal item and one amateur radio related item that you would put in your personal go kit. The rules are very simple. We'll take the calls in semi-orderly way. I'll call for them when the time comes. If an item's been mentioned, please plan on a second item as a substitute. If that item is taken by the time it's your turn, please have a third item. I'm going to use a very judicious process to ascertain the order, and we'll explain it later, but it bears weight. Those who have not checked in, you'd be well advised to do so, but you can't be polled. But I'm just kind of curious what people consider very important on those two items, and we'll see what happens with that. So keep that in mind. That's not my J-poll thing. We'll do that later. So let's begin with the with the fun and games. KF2ID, you have a question, sir. K2BAR.
Yes, K2AMI mentioned on the 440 net tonight. Alan could use a couple more check-ins there. Anyways, K2AMI was the only check-in. That there is a CQ worldwide contest this weekend, and what I didn't think to ask him, it's on a low band contest and it's a single sideband. If anybody else is interested, it starts from 8 a.m. 8 p.m. Saturday to 8 p.m. Sunday. So my question is, what is the exchange used on that contest? CF2ID with K2BAR. K2DSL.
Go right ahead, David.
Ben, I'm checking right now, but I think it starts 8 o'clock. Where the heck is it? 8 o'clock on... 8 o'clock, March 28th, and it goes to... So it's 2 days long, so it starts Friday night at 8 o'clock, and it goes through Sunday night at 8 o'clock. So it's a 48-hour, two-day contest, not a one-day contest. And the exchange is your signal report, which, from a contest perspective, is always a 5-9, and then a sequential serial number that counts up your contacts. So the first contact would be 59001, the second contact you make 59002, et cetera, et cetera, and that's the exchange, regardless of whether you're talking to a DX or a U.S. station. Back to that.
Alrighty. You're reminding me of some mischief that a friend of mine called. Actually, he's a friend of many of ours. I won't say who it is. He's just not here tonight. But, to screw with the head of his competitors, would skip a few hundred numbers hither and yon through the contest. And they checked back with him hours later and called, "Damn, how many more contacts do you have?" He ended up beating him, but he psyched him out. It was very funny, actually. Anyway. All right. Anybody else have comments for Ben? Please call K2BAR.
Yes, Ben, again, you don't have to give the location, state, country, anything like that.
negative, just the 5-9 and the sequential number. The state is usually just for local U.S. ones, so some DX ones do it. Also, if you're just a single operator, not that I think you'd work 48 hours then, but you're only allowed to work 36 of the 48 hours, so you have to sleep for 12. Well, I guess you don't have to sleep. You can do something else. You just can't make contacts. You're limited to 36 hours of contacts. Each off time needs to be at least 1 hour.
Is a glass of wine in your hot tub with your wife good?
If you're having a glass of wine in the wife in the hot tub with my wife, no, that's not good.
With my wife?
So you said your wife. Okay.
With one's own wife. All right. Just trying to straighten it out. All right. So, anyway, any other comments? Okay. Do I hear somebody else?
K2AMI, first time.
Hey, welcome, Mr. Tony. Right ahead. Questions, comments?
Question for Dave. Dave, I noticed that CT does have the worldwide contest on its schedule, but I'm just a little confused that, in that it's a single operator, limited single operator or unlimited operator. Is that limited to one radio, one band, or does that mean something else?
I'm looking to see. Maybe that's old. I don't see that listed in the current categories. It's single operator high, all band or single band, single operator low, all band or single band, QRP, all band or single band, then there's some overlays, and then assisted is if you're going to use a spotting network or a program like CW Skimmer. But I don't see anything related to limited anymore. Maybe that's something that used to be. And maybe Don knows, I don't know. This is, I think, my first one for this actual contest, yeah. So, I don't know about that one, Tony. Sorry, back to that.
Comment?
Comment, go ahead.
Yeah, now that I think about it, in CT, there are often class artifacts that don't belong in certain contests. That just show up because of the way the program is structured. So it may not have ever existed. Don't get too crazy.
I couldn't find a statement in the manual, but I have an old manual. I have an old, probably an old budget. It's a year old CT program. I don't change. It should not have changed that quickly. And Dave, just I didn't get your always called on that. What logging program are you going to use?
I'm going to use N1MM Logger for, I've used it for all the contests, so I'll use it for this one. I don't have it hooked up where it sends WAV files or anything, but I use that for all my logging, and that doesn't require any of the RIDI or CW connections for this one. It's just voice.
Very good. Unfortunately, I'm trained on CT. I'm going to try to fight my way through that.
Well, both are excellent programs, gentlemen. So, good luck to you both. That's super. Anybody else have any comments? Alrighty. So, Ben, did you answer your question?
Yes, you did. I'm just surprised that that was the only exchange. Nothing about position, power, single operator, multiple operator, none of that stuff. I'm just 5-9 and a serial number. Okay, that's what I do.
Yipper. That'd be the case. Alrighty. Well, thank you for that. That's a really good question. And so it's a reminder, 8 o'clock on Friday night, 8 o'clock on Sunday night, on the HF band, and it is the phone contest, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Which means you can use pretty much any band you want, except for the WOOC band. I don't know if 6 meters is allowed. I think it's 160 through 10 or 160 through 6, or one or the other. I can't remember.
160 through 10 HF band.
10 only. Okay, very good. Alrighty. That sounds like a lot of fun. You'll definitely have to edit your Cabrillo file at the end. that got the right designation, because my guess is that CT and possibly even N1MM may not quite get it right. Well, righty, let's see. We have another question. I just want to, before we go to it, see if there are any further check-ins. Please call C2BAR. With your call sign, your name, and whether or not you have a question or comment, or none of the above. Okay, just a reminder, we're going to poll in a few minutes, and we're going to look for your favorite item, personal item, and your favorite amateur radio item to put in your go kit. That is the quiz question of tonight. If you've heard an answer already, you'll have to come up with another substitute item. So generate four or five at least. Want to have for a, why don't we be more specific, a 24-hour, I'll call it a 30-hour go kit. So, on that note, Helmut, your questions are K2BU, K2BAR.
K2BDU, thank you, Helmut, and good evening to all. And here's my question. What is the effect, if any, if two antennas are very close to each other? Over.
Well, there are two primary ones. One is that you might get some detuning your directionality caused by the second antenna in the presence of the first. The other thing you might do is you'll couple a certain amount of energy back down the other antenna into by it's attached to that other antenna. That can be troublesome. I've been pretty lucky. I have a couple of parallel wires here, about 100 watts, but one is 35 feet above the ground, one half, and the other half of the dipole is front long. Then another wire is set up on the other side of the house, on the garage, things like that. So it's not perfectly parallel, but it's up pretty close. So, is there coupling between the two? Well, obviously. But is there a lot of coupling? Yeah, not enough to hurt the front end, but enough to make sure that you want to make sure that you're flat or something like that. Pretty nasty. On VHF, you have even a worse situation. With a couple of 2-meter and 40 and a 2-meter antenna right above each other. Could be a problem. May not be, but it could be. And could end up barbecuing the front end. If you have a gas fed preamp, towel mounted or mast mounted, you definitely want to make sure that a lot of care. Keep that in mind as well. Anybody want to add to that? Please call K2BAR.
K2AMI with a comment.
Go ahead, Tony.
But obviously, if both antennas are resonant to the same band, you're going to have much more problems than were completely non-resonant to the band. Well, if you want to put up to 10-meter antennas, you're going to have much more of a problem. Back to you, net control.
Yeah, in fact, I have that configuration on 6 meters, and I'm about to have it on 2 sideband, where I have, you know, very reasonably high gain antenna, 5 elements on 6, 10 elements on 2. So I can point one 5-element beam and another 5-element beam. No good can come of that, especially if I just put it between, as I often will do. Like, during the 6-meter sprint, I will run 2 antenna directions. If I have the northerly antenna pointed to the southwest, and I have the southern antenna pointed to the northeast, bad things can happen. Now, you may ask, oh, why would you do that? Well, in point of fact, there may be a good reason to. For instance, I might find that one antenna does a board specifically located cup less local noise. Therefore, it's desirable to have that antenna pointed north. Similarly, you want to be able to cover the west or the south, so you have the northerly antenna pointed west out. And the noise characteristic up, it looks better. So there's a lot of things to consider. You know, things you'd say you, quote, would never do may be exactly what you want to do. But anybody else have comments?
Hey, that's through ID. You sort of alluded to it in a way, I think, but it all depends upon the positions of the antenna relative to each other. The positions, you're really forced to put two antennas close to each other for whatever reasons. If you possibly can't, keep one antenna orthogonal to the other. And therefore, I'm assuming these are wire antennas or horizontal antennas. keep the antennas in toggle to each other, so that'll give you the minimal amount of coupling. Also, again, I think you I'm assuming that the worst possible common way of going is, of course, one antenna is connected to a receiver and the other antenna is connected to a transmitter. And then you're transmitting and receiving at the same time. If you could disconnect the receiver from one of the antennas and use only one antenna at a time, then of course, aside from the pattern disturbance, again, we're talking about transmitting or receiving two. Again, the pattern disturbance is the worst problem. If one is connected to a receiver at the same time, the other one is transmitting, then of course you have the problem of blowing out the, if you're close enough, blowing out the front end of your receiver, and of course if you have make preamp up on the roof at the antenna, and you can blow it up in any case, if you have preamp at the antenna. But I don't think you're talking about that case. I think you're talking about the case where you've probably got the two antennas, one connected to a receiver, another one connected to a transmitter, and they're, the best thing to do is keep them orthogonal to each other. That'll give you the minimum problem, although if they're resonant, you're going to have some problem in any case. That's KF2ID.
Okay, very good. Anybody else have any comments to add to that? That was good, then. Thank you. Alrighty. Well, that's a good point. You know, keeping them orthogonal or juxtaposition to each other. Alrighty. The next question, next thing we're going to do is check-ins. Any further check-ins, please call K2BAR. Call, find your name, whether or not you have a question or comment. Okie doke. Well, I'll do announcements, and I have a little technical presentation, short one, very short one, actually. Here, too. On the J-Pulse, and then we're going to check out, do some more questions and check-ins and see if anybody wants to join us, and then we'll see about our quiz for the evening. So, Tony, would you like to give some announcements, or Jim, K2ZO? I'll try with Tony first, and then K2BAR.
Sorry, I just take a moment to pick up the microphone. Coming up on April 18th, we have the River Edge Run. That every year, and it's a special event for the, for public to review amateur radio in service. April 18th is Saturday, and there'll be an announcement in the Barrow Bulletin, but please check it out. They're available. You only need a reasonable walkie-talkie, at least 5 watt walkie-talkie, and it's not a car radio, will be fine. That's one. Number two is this Saturday is the Middletown Amateur Radio Orange County Amateur Radio Club Hamfest up in Middletown, New York. And you might want to look at that if you have an urge to get out of the area for a few hours. Middletown is a pretty nice ride. It's up the thruway, up 17K, and you're there. Maybe an hour. And then, of course, later in the month of April is the Split Rock Amateur Radio Club Hamfest. You might want to check that. There's a slight comment maybe Jim could pick up on. Jim, on our Barra calendar, March 31st is a Tuesday, I believe, and it wasn't previously listed as a kid night. I inserted it as a kid night, and I want to know if that's correct. Can I just ask Jim if there's any change with March 31st, night or not?
Set up. This is K2ZO. I was mobile. I just got in here. Let me pull up the school calendar here. Somehow, somewhere, I think somebody got some stuff posted wrong. I know there was a question like last week, and we definitely had kid night. And the school was open, the school was not closed. Let me go take a look at the school calendar.
If you would, Jim, also check the other kid nights on the Barra calendar and see if they are correct. Back to Nick and Cole.
Comment.
Comment.
is, David, I have the email that Jim originally sent with all the dates, and it does not have March 31st as a date for Kid Night. So I'm just going to send it back to Jim and Tony in case anybody wants to know, and he can validate the dates.
February 17th, the school was closed. March is open every Tuesday night. April 14th, we will not have kid night because the school is closed. And that should be right on through May, we're okay. And then until June. And the June 23rd is a tentative day where the school may or may not be open. We'll have to check on that. They've got it marked that way. It depends on the school snow days. So we should have a kit night every Tuesday in May and in March.
Then Roger, just April 14th should not be listed as a kit night, right?
That's right. It's looking at the school calendar and it shows it's closed.
And Dave, you can do it quicker than I can if you can correct that for the Baronet, for the website.
Okie dokie.
Any other announcements? Like, when is our next meeting, Tony?
Okay, that's April the 5th. The first comes, I think, on a Wednesday. So, April the 5th. But one other comment there that I would like to add to you, Gordon. And, you know, last week you tried to pack it. There's not too many responses, but you know, Dave has been getting very interested in RTTY, and I've been getting interested in RTTY, and there may be others. Perhaps you might want to schedule an RTTY group during one of these meetings. Back to you there, Gordon.
Yeah, we certainly can do that. I've been using PSK31 myself, but sure. In fact, there was some discussion about possibly doing that tonight. I was chatting with Noel and Bennett, and circumstances did not allow me to get all squared away for that, so I figured I'd come up with another thing. But and Noel was a little iffy about being here. Tired. So, but yeah, that's a great idea. Could do that. We'll do that perhaps next week. Why don't we say guys should set up for 10 meter RTTY and maybe a meter PSK31. Square away something to make that happen. So that sounds good to you, Tony?
Well, why don't you take a preliminary survey of the stations on frequency and see if there's enough stations to make it worthwhile.
Alrighty, let's do this. KTDSL, RTTY, and or PSK31?
Yep, sure, both.
K2RPC? Zeto. Yes. K2 Zulu Charlie. KF2 ID. KF2 OK.
OK.
K2 BDU.
Negative.
JK.
No.
K2 ORX. K2 AY.
Hope so. I'm still working on RTTY.
ESP31 like really except like bandwidth. Okay. So yeah, we have a 4 or 5 of us that can do that, and maybe we can spread the word. That'd be fine. So first half might be ESP31 easier, but fair enough. We can do that. And I was figuring 10 meters because most of us have 10 meter capabilities. So you know, spread the word of coffee tomorrow morning, things like that. I may be at coffee tomorrow, but next transmission, I'll make an effort to let people know whether that will be possible. Manana is... Absolutely, I can go to coffee tomorrow. And my beautiful bride will join me as well. So there you go. So we can maybe talk it up tomorrow at coffee this next week. We'll have a Rudy and possibly PSK31 exercise on 10 meters. During the testnet next week. Kind of fun. By the way, if you're not set up for it, per se, but you have a program that will, you know, work RIDI or PSK31, like MixW or any of these others, you might consider, if you have simply a microphone here in your computer or your laptop, positioning it in front of a speaker. Don't worry about whether you can transmit. See if you can copy it just acoustically coupled. You may be pleasantly surprised. So, one of the things that I would ask is that maybe someone come prepared to tell everybody how to configure their basic operation. I mean, since I may should be on, what frequency we should, you know, whether using AFSK or FSK, where to tune. You know, the rudimentary stuff, how much shift we're using. But, you know, just so that the neophytes who might want to get, you know, on, they don't want to get too confused, so there might be something worth how they configure their own specific rig. Well, that may be a taller order, but one of the satisfying motivators is being able to copy. So that's how I got on PSK31, to copy it for so long. I thought, let me just work, and I did. It was great. It's cool. So, anybody else want to have a conversation on this topic further, or want to move on? Alrighty, so several of you have seen my orange J-Bowl. Actually, I've got a couple of different ones. I've got 120, 240, and, you know, they start out their lives as plumbing projects, and then they become antennas. I kind of use that as a model to, you know, explain to scouts that, you know, you can learn plumbing, and then you can build stuff else using plumbing supplies. Kind of. And many of us have spent some significant amounts of money on antennas. And one of my scouting colleagues, Dave Figueroa, he was very impressed with my J-pole and made a mount for one on the roof rack of his work truck. Now, it means his antenna is like 11 feet in the air. So he does have to think about where he's going to vehicle around. But he has a copper J-pole for his mobile on 2 meters, and he spent about $20 on it, maybe less. And here's what's involved. And again, this is using 3/4-inch materials. It's a little more robust than a half-inch, but half-inch is just as fine. So a elbow, not a street elbow, a regular elbow, costs you about $1.02 at Home Depot. You get two caps for the top. They're 70 cents a piece. That costs another $1.40. You get yourself a 3/4-inch copper T, and that costs you about $1.70. And then you take your 10-footer of 1/4-inch copper, which is roughly $10, and you cut off a 56-inch piece, a 19-inch piece, a 1 3/4-inch piece, if I remember right. And you basically make yourself a little J. If you want something underneath that T, kind of sideways, cut off another piece as well. Save your material for that. Double those materials other than the 10-footer. You can also build yourself a 432 one, a 440 one, and the dimensions are roughly 1/3. Roughly, not quite, but roughly 1/3. But I just outlined. Get yourself a 25 or 50 foot piece of coax, cut it in half. Now you have a connector on each end, you take the bare wires, hose clamp tied together. One side of the cable goes to the semiconductor, goes to the pole lead, one goes parallel to it on the short lead of the J-pole. The hose clamp, you just tack it on temporarily once you're sure water's been attained. Mark the spot, hit it with Scotch Brite, which is a little bungee pad in your kitchen, and solder it all up, solder the wire to it, and now you have a J-pole for 2 meters and a J-pole for 440, I should say, all for about, $35, let's figure. Beautiful thing. And, the coax sitting around, you can wear. Now, why do I mention that I remember it as not doing the multi-feed single thought? Number one, you still have to bring the different feed lines together for the different bands. I didn't want to make my antennas that complicated that I had several different bands. And if I'm going to have separate feed points, I might as well have separate antennas, get them clear. Back to our question about putting antennas on different bands, RF goes by. You get a cleaner pattern that way. And if you really need to combine them, you can use one of the combiner selectors that all the usual manufacturers sell. In my case, I just keep them all separate. So, for about $20 or so, build yourself a 2-meter J-pole for your home. For $4, you can buy 2 lengths of 10 feet. Probably for like $40, you can build yourself two 2-meter ones and 40 ones. So, you're all set for all sorts of good stuff. So, say $40, $50, you can have, antennas galore. Probably $50, you can have 4 antennas for $50. And think about that next time you go and spend some money in the local hamlet. So that was my little tip for tonight. I like using 3/4-inch copper because it's broader bandwidth, higher power. I usually don't use RG58, RG8. I mean, you certainly can for affordable stations, but when I was building mine, I used people something of that nature, like Archine or something, that I had kicking around. So it's all good. And I used a couple of cable ties to coax and bring it up the main leg point, and I then use braid on the main leg, and then on short length, I extend the center insulator. It doesn't matter which way the wire gets connected to part of the vertical. And I do that because that piece going across already has insulation on it, semiconductor to coax. So, the minimum amount of RTV on the connection after you're all done, things nice and water resistant. But that's pretty much it. Any questions on that? Any further, just call K2BAR.
K2BAR, KC2SGS.
Go ahead, Rachel.
How are you separating the J-pole component that is ground or the shield from the center conductor?
That 1 3/4-inch piece goes between the center part of the T out to the elbow.
So is the T plastic as opposed to copper?
No, it's a DC grounded antenna. Both sides get tied to the copper.
So you're feeding from both ends?
Yeah. Basically, the copper piece is a sideways T feeding an elbow via a short 1 3/4-inch stub of copper, referred in the trade as a nipple stub of copper. Then you come up 19 inches on the short side, 56 inches on the other, cap the caps on. By the way, one of the things I should have for y'all to think about, number one, before you put all the fittings together, give yourself a good Scotch-Brite pad, and that to scuff up your copper so it solders up pretty. Number two, the hammer pop caps in place, and also to make sure everything is seated properly. Make sure you pre-brush all your elements before you Scotch-Brite. Not use Brillo or steel wool of any kind, because that copper is just cause corrosion. And then on the side part of the T that comes down, you can make that as long a hook on the thing as you want. You chooses on it or not. But again, I bring the main coax straight up, pack the silk on the long leg, just a matter of pushing the button. Then bring the insulated center conductor out to the short 19-inch piece, pack solder that there as well, and away you go. In fact, if you'd like, I can probably give you some dimensions to how far up from the top of the 19-inch, pardon me, the top of the copper nipple to where the solder points are. My antennas, and it is very critical, 3 5/8 would do, 3.5, 3 5/8 inches from the top of the copper pipe to where each of the two tack-in points are for the coax. And then using a hunk of like RG213, it'll have a male connector on the end, which is, depending on how long it is, will work fine. Using a short jumper just to get it started, you might need a 83 ISP connector, which is the female SO-39, or the equivalent end barrel connector. So, Rachel, does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Thank you for it.
Well, I'll check you in as well. Anybody else have questions about the JPL? Okay. Well, again, I found this to be really, really useful. Some people like to hang these things. One other thing you can do before you get too crazed is take a hole in the top of the long element cap and put in a bolt type screw eye, I would recommend it, and affix that in with two nuts, one on top, one on the bottom. If you can get glass nuts and stuff like that, even better, but then you can solder them in place. You might want to consider that, but that'll give you a hanging loop. It will, in fact, lengthen your antenna, so you might want to take tighten the screw eye off of the overall length of the long element, but that does give you the option of hanging it. When I'm confronted with that requirement, I usually just grab a couple of cable ties and girth long elements, and then I run a third cable tie through them and cinch them down. Now I have a loop that's cinched down like two, if you will, like barrel stays, you know, eventually. And I can attach wire to a rope to that, so that I don't have to worry about continuing maintenance or worry about whether or not, you know, the rope that I'm hanging the thing from got wet, the plastic tends to provide a novel amount of insulation. Other techniques as well, if you have a need to hang your head. So, anybody else? Well, again, when I thought about the cost of an average 2-meter only 5/8 NMO antenna and a mount, I said, you know, there's got to be a better way. You know, for $50, for the same $50, I can have a mobile antenna on 2 meters and a 220 and 40 antenna for home or vice versa, a combination with 2 lengths of 3/4-inch tubing. You can save yourself a few dollars by using 1/2-inch, perfectly fine. One last suggestion is use some enamel tape on it to corrode it. So, anything else, please call KTVA. All right, well, just a reminder, we have an amateur radio class on the 17th of April, and that should be a boatload of fun. It's Bergenfield, so if you know someone who would like to take the technician exam, please email me at w2tgt@awl.net, and we'll be happy to clear you in with that. And the other thing to consider is that you know, we have the run coming up, as Tony mentioned. It's a public service event. It's good for, you know, Barry to get out there and look like a cohesive team and continue to present itself. Tony, just as a clarification, is that done nominally under the auspices of the River Edge Office of Emergency Management?
I've contacted the director of the Office of Emergency Management, and asked if he could supply some search radio operators to assist us. We're the primary force. They don't get too many search operators to come out for this event. But it's mainly on the River Edge Recreation Department. Most of my coordination is with them. But we do hope to have a few of the search operators from River Edge working with us with their own radios and their own frequencies.
Yeah, they are on FRS because they actually have a public service, a public safety frequency.
They have a public safety frequency.
Okay, very funny. Well, it might be a good idea, you know, I mean, certainly, you know, if Barra wants to make it a club event, they should, you know, go ahead and get the approval for that. But more importantly, you know, if the Office of Emergency Management of River Edge wants operators to come, then it'd probably be good if they indicated so on the list, and that way, you know, everybody's known to have supported River Edge OEM, especially under the current circumstances, and, you know, complementing that with their CERT folks is fine too. Alrighty. Sounds good. We're in dandy shape here. Anybody else have any questions or comments for the event? Well, we go to our checklist of what you put in your go kit. One personal item and one technical item. We'll call it that. Anybody else have any subjects or anything they'd like to bring up? Please call K2BAR.
W2JK.
Go right ahead, Doug.
Okay, our next test session will be on April 24th. That's the fourth Friday in April. Reason being it's the fourth is because on the 17th the school is closed. That would be the same day your tech class, which is, so everything worked out good with the date there. So we'll be on the 24th, the test session will be on the 24th, the Friday on the, at 7 o'clock at the high school. With that, back to that, W2JK.
Excellent. Just an observation, I did notice that, I've been noticing this for a while now, since maybe the full Christmas, ULINCO DJ175 is featured on the back page of the newly arrived AES catalog for, you know, under $100. It's $99, guys. It includes a charger and a desk stand. It's really, really nice. Very nice pole deal. It's a 2-meter HT. It also does weather bands, 200 memories. It's got extended receive to 174 megahertz and down to 136. I mean, it's just sweet. And 5-watt output, nickel metal hydride battery, drop-in charger. You know, it doesn't get much nicer than that. So if you're thinking about a spare radio or a radio to give to a young person or a new ham, something like that. It's certainly a simple radio, but fully functional, because it has no, you know, hampering. In fact, I like it so much that I would ask, you know, Olenko, are you going to come out with a 275, a 375, and a 475? You know, for 220 and 440, because it looks about to be a really nice arrangement. So. Take a look at that, the DJ175T. Oi! Let's get our list together. Again, if someone mentions the an item is retired from your suggestion, so you do have to pay attention. I recommend write down what you hear and looking for. Here we go. So, one personal item and one technical or people radio-related item in your go kit. So, the way we're going to do this is I'm going to call the stations who gave questions first, comments second, announcements third, and then everybody else. So, our first station, KF2ID. Mr. Ben, what are your two items?
K2BAR, this is KC2PYB.
I got you in there, Richard. I'll add you to the bottom of the list. Is that okay?
That's fine. I couldn't get in. You wouldn't stop talking there for a while. Getting like somebody else.
That's fine with me. Yeah, but am I going to sit there and tell you you talk too fast and berate you? No, no, just kidding. Oh, I'm sorry. That's a different net. Sorry, guys. Anyway. Yeah. Helmut, K2BDU, your two items, sir. Helmut, I think you're off frequency. You want to try to get on frequency again? One more time for Helmut.
I take money and a flashlight.
Money, okay. And a flashlight. Is that the technical item? I thought that was personal, but okay. You're calling it a technical item? Then by God, it's going to be on the technical item list. All right, very good, thank you. Let's see. The next one would be KC2SGF.
Batteries, I would think, and
might be power supply with extension cords, stuff like that. Might be also a thought.
Okay. Very, very good. Alrighty. EC2RX. You don't have any items you want to bring?
I think the items that were mentioned are all valid. The flashlight, extra batteries, mag mount antenna, or a replacement rubber duck, because it's possible that it gets broken or disconnected. Something to drink, and maybe a... an energy bar of some sort, or the like.
Yeah, of course. That's a good one. Okay. Thank you, Rachel. KC2PYB. One personal item, one technical item. For your 30-hour go-kit.
Personal item, I would bring my radio license, my amateur radio license, a copy of it, and besides the one I carry in my wallet, and a roll of duct tape to use on people I don't like, or who would start to annoy me after a while.
Okay, technical items, Richard?
It was a technical item, the duct tape.
Okay. Oh, dear me. Oh, man. Well, let's see. First item I would bring, that would be meds and a way to get clean water from whatever might be available. And technical item, I would probably bring a coaxial cable and perhaps some facility for elevating an antenna. That it'd be, or some way to log messages, such as station log or message log, something of that nature, with a writing instrument. And the other item that I would say that I think is critical for this list is some modest form of a first aid kit. But that's me. You guys covered a lot of it. That's very good. Of course, I never thought of so many different kinds of paper before Tony started in. Tony, let me give you a hint. Just bring the paper towels. Unless you're space challenged, in which case, just bring the toilet paper. But that's pretty cool. That's very, very cool. So congratulations, folks. You did very, very well. This group is pretty well plugged in. I'm impressed. I mean, there are other things you could add, but this will be a good start on things, to say the least. Anybody want to add anything they want to comment on?
KCDSL.
There were two stations in there. David first.
I don't think anyone mentioned a knife, but as long as we have Jim around, we usually have some sort of crocodile Dundee machete handy. Back to that.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, that's why I reduced his Colt 45 to a personal protection device. Yes, I understand. Which under certain circumstances could be the machete. It could also be, a can of mace. You never know. Who was the other station?
Yeah, that's 2K Mobile.
Okay. Your two items, Mr. Jim, and good evening.
Oh, and a good evening. Yeah, I usually bring most of a roll of paper towel to follow up on Tony. Not necessarily a brand new full roll, but most of a roll. Some plastic bags. I usually bring one of the little fold-up poncho thingies that come around occasionally just to keep from getting too wet. for besides radios and power supply and batteries, a spare battery for the HD, and earphone and a pair of headphones for the big radio, I generally bring a couple of moderate length pieces of like RG8X, something like that, that's reasonably small and only medium mossy, so that I could extend the mag mount out to a reasonable location and get it outdoors, whatever. Just a few of the items. Of course, real good list that people brought up. Very, very good indeed. And that's too good.
Yeah, you expanded it by about a little more than 25% all by yourself, or you and I did, but yeah. Alrighty. That's very good, Jim. Welcome aboard. Anybody else?
KC2SDF.
Okay, Rachel.
I don't know what it's called other than a MacGyver tool. You know, one of those things that you flip open and it's a pair of long-nosed pliers and has screwdrivers and everything else on it.
A Gerber multi-tool or a Leatherman super tool, that kind of thing?
Affirmative.
They're wonderful. Absolutely. I'm partial to two Leatherman products that they no longer manufacture. One is the Super Tool, and the other one is the Super Tool 200. Hey, Jim, if you can find me some Super Tool 200, you'll be my new best friend. K2ZF, K2VAR.
How about the Skeletool? I just got one of those.
I don't like the external. My son John likes those because they're light. I don't like them because the external, the external access to the various tools. But if you have one kicking around in one of the stores that nobody loves anymore, let me know.
No, I don't. They sell very quickly. I like the Gerber a lot myself.
Well, I used to like the Gerbers, except that I noticed that steel was better, I thought anyway, on the Leatherman. There's a new Leatherman, one of the ones in that same family you mentioned. My son bought me one, and somebody borrowed it, walked off of it. So I did have one of the new ones, and one of its blades was different than the other. It was a lot sharper than special steel. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I don't remember the model number, though.
Yeah, there's one there that is rather impressive. It's got a really, really wonderful steel. It's hard. So, number one, it doesn't lose its edge easily, but more importantly, when you give it an edge, it was your, it's not one of these things where you're not sitting there with a whetstone diamond sharpener for the rest of your natural life trying to sharpen this blade and finding out that all you're doing is grinding steel off the blade into filings and not actually ever getting a sharpened edge. I mean, some of the real junk stuff that you see out there, guys, is just that. The $20 knife, a horror show. If it has an edge at all, you'll never be able to put another one back on it yourself easily ever again. Comment?
This is W2JEK. I had one of those El Cheapo knockoffs before I got the real genuine Leatherman. And one of the first things I did was try to open a soda bottle. Believe it or not, the cap lifter wouldn't fit under the soda bottle that was, I had to file the thing that would make it work. And of course, I somehow got the soda bottle open, but it was a real hassle. So that was one thing. And the metal one, it was so soft, I actually bent the pliers. And good about it with the file. I was up on the roof one day and doing a job, and the one thing I didn't have was a file. That was about the only thing that was any good, but I've sort of retired because I have a good Leatherman now, and like you say, that's a good, a very good tool. I had what they call the original type. Back to that, W2JK.
Yeah, the Super Tool. I have one of those as well. The Super Tool and the Super Tool to run. And somewhere I have one of the new, not the specific model, or something like that one. Actually, he was confirmation sponsor for one of the steps on my trip last year, and for his, you know, confirmation, and they asked his mother, and she'd like to have a multi-tool, so what the heck, you know, very deserving young man, and a $70 expense was a more burden on that family. My son, who worked at Campbell at the time, facilitated buying that. Thank you very much, Tom. $1 off of it. He said, Dad, you need one of these knives too. So I bought one, and then he said, oh, by the way, you know the money you just saved on the two knives? I can get this exoskeletal thing where I like it with the money you just saved. And I went, oh. So I ended up spending the full value price of two knives and got three. never let it be said my son's not industrious and enterprising and opportunistic. Anyway, so any other comments on these?
JTDSM. Hey, David. Gordon, if you go to Amazon.com and do a search on Leatherman Super Tool, you'll come back with two. One that seems to be available right now in black, and one that you'd have to wait a while for, which is the traditional silver or whatever, metal-looking one. But I think you can order it if you want on Amazon. The black one's $49.95.
Okay. I'll keep that in mind. I generally don't buy black tools only because I can't find them. I'll look for the other one. That's not a bad idea. Just another thing, the Fairlawn Club seems to be interested in some of the former Orange Box projects that we worked on back a year or so ago. And might want to contact Gene. That would be a good idea as to what they're planning to do for their gear. Want to get some creative ideas. I've got a PowerPoint presentation or text if someone would like. Email me again at W. I'll shoot you off some ideas. Plus, I have some updated notes which I provided to what I would do now as opposed to then. Modification. Learn some things along the way. And the like. And, you know, there's all sorts of good stuff out there. So definitely the super tool should be in the lid. And the super tool is some sort of multi-tool. Server or the Leatherman, top of whatever little kit box is. There should be one that you don't carry in your person that is not part of your other stuff that you keep in your go kit. That's hard, but I do that. By the way, I get away with one of those super tools and not just wire, but a package of, or several packages of Anderson power poles, and I've become very adept at using wires and the blade to trim out the wire just so, and be able to manually crimp little bit by little bit to give you a perfect crimp of an Anderson power pole using Leatherman. So it's not what you want to do all the time, but in the go kit you don't want to carry a lot of weight. You want to have something you get multiple uses out of. So I carry those and a stack of fuses. Away you go. Anybody else?
It's W2JK.
Okay, Doug.
Yeah, well, if you're going out on someplace with a radio, I presume that would be one of the things you would obviously have. You'd want to have and some kind of an antenna. You want to have some to make sure that the antenna matches the connector on the antenna connector on the radio. You might need an adapter, and that would be something that you have in mind. I think somebody said if you do it something like a field day, like I have that 40 meter rig in my attaché case, and I have all of the proper connectors, but my feed line to my radio, and my center conductor has the little connector for the antenna. I've got the wire, nuts on there that for the wire, and so on. My wire of the antenna itself, the telegraph key, and my headphones, and my power supply, and an extension cord, and a three-way outlet adapter for a three-wire plug, adapting it to a two-wire plug. Things like that, all that kind of stuff. Don't know where you're going to be and whether your three-wire plug is not going to fit in somebody's two-wire socket someplace to be up to that kind of a situation. So we're trying to try and get plans for all of that kind of stuff. Back to that, WTJK.
Yeah, I think one of the things you need to keep in mind about a go kit is to make sure that the equipment that's in it lives there, and that if it's consumable, that you refrain from consuming it, and if you take something out of it, it's put right back as soon as you're done with the task at hand, and not left on a workbench, desk, whatever. You want to not do that.
Where am I?
Okay, sorry.
I mean, that's two things. You talked about the Lincoln and the T20 radio. They do have out, not the same series, but a model called the DJ-D27, which is 20 radio. It comes with 220 FM band. I've got one, and it was $160. It's not that expensive, it may be. The second comment is that if I can just blow my horn a little bit. I had trouble with my rig blaster. I've been working on it for 2 weeks to get it working in my RTCY. I discovered that the optical relay in there that triggers the talk was defective. And I just wired in a read relay to do the same job. And I'm ready to test it. And I wonder if Dave is still awake there. Can you go to 14080 and listen to see if he hears me?
Yeah, Tony, I can do that. Let me just fire up my program, and then I can do it. It'll take me 2 or 3 minutes.
Okay, I'll give you 2 or 3 minutes, and if you would start sending when you are on frequency, I'll return.
Okie dokie, so you're doing it 1480 where your radio says 1480, or 1480 where you're transmitting, because there's a mark usually of 2125, so you go 2125 below.
PO is reading out 14.080.
Okay, then we're on 1482 listening, but that's good. Okay, I'm doing it now.
You hear me using reading, Tony?
Yeah.
Okay, so, if I remember right, here's a question for NS2K. How do I get the Pro 3 to display really directly? Sideband digital, lower sideband digital, nope, garbage. All right, well, we'll see if we put a better antenna on, and we can see if we can decode. That's pretty cool. I haven't done that in a while. I figure with somebody local, I'd try it. All right, anybody else? Well, any last comments on any subject before we close the net? Thank you, everybody, for joining us tonight. Really good crowd. A little different the way we got congregated, but we all made it. That's a good thing. Just switched to an HF antenna, and that might help over here. I'd like to encourage people to support the Burton County FM Association, who's gracious enough to let us use their repeaters, both on 14679, 443100, and when it gets better, 444100. Be advised that the 440 net is 830 on 443100 right now, because the 100 to 444 megahertz, dot 100 megahertz, I should say, is down. The Monday night is the Barra 10 meter net at 9 o'clock on 28350. Tuesday is the, of course, the kid night, generally speaking, at Westwood High School. Wednesday is the Barra chat net on this frequency, 14679, currently in Franklin Lakes, and 830 on 443100. On Thursday is the 440 net, and last but not least, we're back here for the tech net at 9 o'clock on 14679. So I'd like to thank everybody for joining us tonight, and have a pleasant evening. This is K2BAR, the Burton Amateur Radio Association, Securing net, and this is W2TTT, returning the repeater to normal amateur use.